We're holding Kapay Amadei's eight lines from the bottom. The line begins at 3. We were talking about what happened when various Amoroyim passed away. We talked about yesterday what happened by the Leviathan and whatever. So now the Gemara gives us a few lines of various things that happen when different Tanoyim or Amoroyim passed away. So each of these things, different Mephoshim talk about, does it mean that these things actually happened, or does it mean that the effect on the world was as severe and as pronounced as if that could be described by these things, or does it mean maybe Reb Shlomo ben Hayosem and Naran and some other Rishonim say that it means that these are metaphors that the Safdonim, we said yesterday, you have the professionals who used to give a stadium, that these various things that we're going to list might be metaphors that the Safdonim used by their Levias to express the magnitude of what had happened. So the Gemara says, Ki noch napshe de Rabbahu, when Rabbahu passed away, achisu amudi de Kesri Maya. The pillars of Kesri, which was the city in Eretz Yisrael, Caesarea, where Rabbahu lived, the pillars of Kesri started swimming with water. In other words, like as if the pillars themselves are crying. When Rabbi Yossi passed away, shofu marzavei tzipori doma, the gutters that channel water off the roofs of Tzipori, because that was the Tzipori was where Rabbi Yossi lived. So the gutters of Tzipori were running with blood. Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that the reason why most of the other ones that we're going to have over here, we can understand why those are an appropriate thing for the tzaddik passing away. For example, the previous one that the pillars started shedding tears is easy enough to understand why that's in sadness that the tzaddik passed away, but why the gutters running with blood. So Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that Nishbach Domoy al Yichud Hashem, that his blood had been spilled for the unity of Hashem, which could mean that he was killed al Kiddush Hashem, or it could just mean that at some point he was wounded or whatever by the Romans in connection with Kiddush Hashem. And then he brings from the Tesefta that he nosa nafshe ala mila, that he was most in nefesh for mila, and therefore the tribute to him when he passed away was that the gutters ran with blood. So, when Rabbi Yaakov passed away, is chamil kechavi b'yimama, the stars were visible during the day. In other words, as if the sun was eclipsed and the stars were visible. When Rabbi Asi passed away, is iaku kol ilanaya, all of the trees were uprooted. When Rabbi Chia passed away, nachisu kipi dinura merakia, stone, fiery stones, like meteors or whatever, fell from heaven. Did a Menachem Berab Yossi, or Berab Simoi, it says on the side, really, it's supposed to be, when Rabbi Menachem Berab Simoi passed away, Ishto with Salmanaya, all of the images that the Goyim had put up in the town, Bahavul Machotzaya, and they became smooth. Rashi explains that means not only the images, like the freestanding ones, it means even the images on coins. The Gemara brings in Pesachim and also in Avodah Zarah, that this Rabbi Menachem Berab Simoi was always careful during his lifetime to never look at such images, even on coins. So therefore, his reward was that after he passed away, all of those images became flattened out. L'machlotzaya means as if they had been flattened out with machlotzayim, which was a tool that we learned earlier in the Masechta, is used for spreading plaster. So it's as if they had all been plastered over and became smooth. The Yerushalmi actually says on it that what it is the people of his town covered over when he passed away. They covered all the images in the town. Because they said, given that he never looked at such images while he was alive, it's not appropriate that he should have to be looking at them after he passed away. In other words, that he should have to be passing in front of them, and therefore they covered all of them. So according to that, it's just they covered them. All Gemara is saying that they actually literally got flattened out. When Rabbi Tanchum Bachia passed away, iskatzu kol andartaya all of the andartaya got chopped down. Andartaya are these kinds of statues that kings put up for their glory, for their honor. So they're not a statue of the king. It's not necessarily meant to be worshipped. It's just there to represent how important the king was, like the various statues that we have in public parks and whatever nowadays. So when he passed away, all of those were chopped down. Rabbi Yoshiv, when Rabbi Yoshiv passed away, so he lived in the city of Nahada, 70 tunnels were dug. In other words, the thieves over there figured they have free reign now, because now that Rabbi Yoshiv had passed away, so they started digging tunnels to go and break into houses. And 70 of them were dug in one day in Nahada. Then Rav Hamnuna, when Rav Hamnuna passed away, Nechisu Kifi de Barja Merakia, hailstones fell from Shemayim. The Rabba of Rav Yosef, when Rabba and Rav Yosef passed away, Noshuk Kifi de Pros Ahadadi, the two edges of the Pros kissed one another. So Rashi explained that the Kifi, not really the edges, but rather the arches of the bridges. Rashi explains what happened was across the Pros River, there were bridges, of course. So those bridges broke down, and now you have like the two arches on the two ends are leaning towards each other, looking like they're kissing each other. Now Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, actually, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, passed away about 2.5 years apart. So it can mean that it happened when Rabba passed away, and again when Rabbi Yosef passed away. In fact, by Rabba, actually, the Gemara tells us in Bav Metzia, when it tells the story of how he passed away, the Gemara says there was a tremendous storm on that day. So that would fit with what we're saying over here, that the bridges broke down. There's actually the Levi Yitzchak, that Rebbe's father talks about it briefly in one place. He has a long discussion about what Rabba and Rabbi Yosef represent in Kedusha. And he says there that when we say over here that this happened when Rabba and Rabbi Yosef passed away, so it may mean, in other words, we don't mean when they physically passed away, because like we're saying, that was a couple of years apart. It might mean Lamaila at a time that represents the time that they passed away, because we know that time Lamaila doesn't work the same as it does Lamata. Anyway, Abaya and Rava, when Abaya and Rava passed away, and again Abaya and Rava passed away many years apart, so it would have to mean that it happened when Abaya passed away and again when Rava passed away, or like Rav Levi is saying that it happened at some point that was determined Lamaila. Noshuk Kipi did Digla Sahadadi, the same thing happened. The bridges broke down and the arches kissed one another, but not over the Pros, like by Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, but rather by the Chidekel River. The difference being Rabba and Rabbi Yosef lived in Pupadissa, which is located on the Pros River. Rava, Abaya and Rava lived in towns that are located by the Chidekel River. So therefore the same thing happened by that river. And Kinoch Napshe, the Meshaoshia, and when the Meshaoshia passed away, Ton Dikli Shitzi, all of the palm trees started growing thorns. So again, all of these can mean actual physical things that happen when these Chachamim passed away, or it can mean metaphorical to describe how severe was the effect on the world, as if these things had happened. Marashal says on a couple of them that the symbolism behind them, for example, the one about the stars being visible by day, he says that the sun is too bright to see them. So therefore, like we said before in the Gemara, we brought the pasuk about when Yeshayahu was killed, Vachshachti v'hevesi Hashemesh b'tzahrayim, that Hashem says, I'm going to bring the sun down from the heavens in the middle of the day. So therefore, metaphorically, when he passed away, when Rabbi Yaakov passed away, it was as if the sun had set in the middle of the day, and all of a sudden the stars are visible. And so forth with some of these other ones, the one about the gutters running blood with Rabbi Yossi. And Marashah says the vote is that up until then, there had been water which represents chesed coming milamayla. Now, instead of chesed, there's gura, which is represented by blood. The Oil of Ephraim, a sefer of Jerushim, from the Kli Yakar, goes systematically through each one of them and explains what the symbolism is in more detail than Marashah does. So we're not going to go through all of them, but for example, he says the one about that all of the coins were smoothed out. He says represents that people, when Rabbi Nachman ben Simoni passed away, people realized for themselves what good is money. The money can't prevent a person from passing away. A person isn't in this world in order to make money. A person is in this world to do Torah and mitzvah. So therefore, it's like as if all the coins became flattened out and useless. And similarly by a bunch of the other ones. Okay. Tanarabanan. The Elu Kroyin Sha'ein Mis'achim. The following times when a person tears his clothes for Kriya can never be completely sewn up. And we're going to talk about later on what exactly Ichui means. Sakareya al Oviv Val Ima, a person tears Kriya for his father or for his mother passing away. Val Rabash, as opposed to the other relatives, where eventually he can sew the rip up completely. Val Rabash Alimde Torah, for his Rebbe who taught him Torah. Now here you have, Tosfos points out that you have a discussion at the end of Eilu Metzius. What does that mean? Does it mean Davka a Rebbe that you learned most of your knowledge of Torah from? This is on the previous Amud on Chafei Amud Beis. Tosfos mentions this. Or the Gemara mentions over there another possibility that it means that even somebody who just taught you one thing in Torah, like without him, you wouldn't have known that one detail is enough to tear Kriya on him. So Tosfos discusses that maybe the halacha is in fact like that. But on the other hand, Shema Hoyu Machmir and Alatzman, in Shulchan Aruch, it just brings that Rabbi Muvak you have to tear Kriya for. So your Rebbe that you learned most of your Chokmah from. So for example, Gimel Tammuz, everybody tore Kriya. I haven't seen anybody tear Kriya, for example, when Rabbanim in the Shchuna passed away, or when their own Rabbeim in Yeshiva passed away. So there's that. Va'al Nosi Va'al Avbeistin. Also, if the Nosi or the Avbeistin passed away, Val Shmuis arose, also for bad news, which we're going to describe soon what kind of bad news we're talking about. Val Birkas Hashem, when you hear somebody cursing Hashem's name. Val Sefer Torah Shem Nisra, when a Sefer Torah was burnt. Val Ore Yehuda, when you see the destroyed cities of Yehuda. Val Amikdash, when you see the Beis Amikdash, the destroyed Beis Amikdash. Val Yerushalayim, and when you see the destroyed city of Yerushalayim. So we'll talk about those dinim in more detail further down on the Amud. We'll also talk about what we do nowadays as far as those dinim. The Kareya Amikdash will mostify Yerushalayim. You can have a case where a person tears Kriya for the Beis Hamikdash, and then he tears a little more for Yerushalayim. We'll see further down what the case is that you would do that, because normally you see Yerushalayim first. So let's go through. So that's the Braisa. It's a Braisa that actually says from the Sechta Smachos. Now let's go through and analyze it. Oviv v'imay v'rabbe shalinda tarda menolam. Where do we know that a person has to tear Kriya when his father or mother or his Rebbe taught him Torah? How do we know the Esoterikia? Dichtiv. We know all three of them from one pasuk. The pasuk says that Elisha saw as Eliyahu was being taken up to Shemayim in a fiery chariot, alive. Vehu mitzayik, and he was screaming out, Ovi, Rechav Yisrael Parashav, my father, the chariot of Jewish people and his horsemen. So Ovi is the Ovi v'Imo. So when he says my father, means he's comparing that Eliyahu is passing away, he's comparing it to the catastrophe of his own father or mother passing away. So we see that he would have to tear Kriya for that. And then, plus it continues that he ripped his clothes. When it continues, the chariots and the horsemen of the Jewish people, Zed Rabbi Shalimdo Torah, that refers to his Rebbe who taught him Torah. The most is my mashma. How does Rechav Yisrael HaFarashav come to mean his Rebbe who taught him Torah? The answer is Kedimitagrim Rabbi Yosef. Based on the way the Targum Yonason says on that pasuk, where the Gemara often attributes it to Rabbi Yosef, because Rabbi Yosef was an expert in the Targum. In some places it talks about Rabbi Yosef was blind, so he couldn't learn Torah Shabbat, so instead he focused on Torah Shabbat Peh, in particular the Targum, and he became an expert in it. So he translates, Rebbe, that Elisha is crying out, Rebbe, the Tavlohim Yisrael, with Sloise, he with his Tfilis, is better and more effective for the Jewish people, than chariots and horsemen. So we see, in other words, that his Rebbe is described as better for the Jewish people, more effective for them than chariots and horsemen. So Marashah says, in other words, the vote is he would daven for the Jewish people, and who is the one who davens and his tefillahs are effective for the people is a Talmid Chacham. So therefore, who teaches the people Torah, so therefore we see the Sedakta connection. And not so. So therefore, so and the pasuk continues that he tore his clothes. So veloimus achen minolan. So where do we know that such a tear for parents or for a rebbe can never be sewn back up? Dichtiv, because that same pasuk continues. By Yachsef the Gadav, he grabbed a hold of his clothes. By Kroyim Lashnayim Kroyim, and he ripped them into two pieces. So what's Lashnayim Kroyim? Imash Mashinema by Kroyim. If it says already that he ripped them, any Yadesh Lashnayim, obviously you rip something that's into two. That teaches us that it remained rift in two forever because he was never allowed to permanently sew it back up. As we're going to say at the bottom of the Amud, you're allowed to stitch it up loosely, but you're not allowed to make a proper, you're not allowed to sew it up in the proper way. So we see that there is the first three that occurred in Veloy Misah. However, Rish Lakish asked Rabbi Yochanan, that's not a proof. Eliyahu Chayhu. Eliyahu Navi is actually alive. So what's Elisha ripping Kriya for anyway? That doesn't show that you rip Kriya for somebody who actually passed away. Eliyahu didn't. Amalei, Rabbi Yochanan answers him, Kivin Dechtiv, Eloi Ra'ohu Oid. Yeah, but since the Pasuk says that Elisha never saw Eliyahu again, Lagabi Dei, Kemes Gummy, then as far as he's concerned, it's like he passed away. Now, the Ritzvah says, I mean, we're not talking about, let's say, a person's Rebbe goes overseas, we're not going to say that he should take a Kriya for him because he's not going to see him, because conceivably, you might travel there, or he might travel to you and see you. But here, where he actually went up to Shemayim, then that's different. Okay. Next. Nasi va'av based in Shmuel Saroyas Manola. The next three we had in the list in the Braisa, where if the Nasi or the Av based in passes away, or if there's Shmuel Saroyas, bad news, which we'll say in a second what kind of bad news we're talking about. So Manolon. So where do we know that from? Dichtiv. Because the Pasuk described, so you have the story at the end of Shmuel Aleph, Shaul and his sons and the Jewish army go and fight against the Plishtim and Harar Gilboa. And Shaul and his sons and many Jews are killed over there. And the pasuk says that when David found out about it, by Yachsef David the Gadar by Yikroim, David grabbed a hold of his clothes and tore them. The Gam Kol Anoshim Asher Itay, also all the men who were together with him did the same thing. And the pasuk continues, by Yispidu and they mourned, by Yivku and they cried, by Yatsumu Ad Erev and they fasted until the evening, and they were sad about Al Shaul, by Al Yehonah son Benoi, by Al Amashem, by Al Beis Yisrael Kinoflu Becholos. So what is each the so and for so, so for Shaul and for Yonason and for the people of Hashem and the house of Israel that they fell by the sword. So what does that mean? What does each of these phrases mean? Shaul Zenossi. When it says that Shaul means the Nossi, because Shaul is the king, and the Nossi is tantamount to a king, so therefore we learn from that when the Nossi passes away, Teokriya. Yehonasan Ze'avvestin. When it says Yehonasan, tells us that you do the same thing for the Avvestin. That doesn't mean that Yehonasan himself was the Avvestin. In fact, the Chazal tell us in other places that the Avvestin in those times was Goyig. It means that Yehonasan was the kind of Talmid Chacham of the caliber to be an Av Beis Din, and therefore, since the Pasuk is mentioning it, it shows that you take a Kriya for an Av Beis Din. Al Am Hashem v'Al Beis Yisrael, and when it says for the people of Hashem and the house of Yisrael, Elu Shmur Saroyes, this refers to bad news, meaning, in other words, that so bad news then refers to when a majority of the Jewish people has been involved in a disaster. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be that most of the Jewish people were killed. We don't find by this battle that a majority of the Jewish people were killed, but a majority of them were involved in this battle, and many of them were killed, and many of them were taken prisoner by the Plishtim. That's the definition of Shmuel Saroyes. Some Mephoshim also talk about it's possible that there may have been there the majority of any one Shevet, and to a certain extent, the majority of even one Shevet can be called a Kohol, as you have in connection with the Dinim of Parhelam Davashal Tzibur, and therefore that would justify calling it Shmuel Saroyes. So the question is, Amalei Rav Bar Shaba L'Rav Kahana, the Ema Ad Dehavu Kulu. Yeah, but how do you know from the Pasuk that you have to tear when one or another of those things happen? Here, all three of them happened. There was Nasi and Av Beis Din and Shmuel Saroyes. Maybe you only have to tear Kriya when all three of those happen at the same time, and the Braise is saying that not. Amalei, so Rav Kahana answers him, Al Hifsik In. Yeah, but if that's the case, then the Pasuk would have said that they were crying and tearing their clothes and so forth. Al Shaul v'Yehonas and Bnoi v'Am Hashem and so forth. The fact that it says by each one Al Hifsik Inyan, that breaks it up. It shows that for any one of those things individually is reason enough to tear Kriya. Which Marsha asks in that case. So what about Val Am Hashem Val Beis Yisrael? Those aren't two separate things on the face of it. That's a Ben Yehoyada that says, okay, maybe Am Hashem means specifically the Talmud Chacham, and then Beis Yisrael means the rest of the Jewish people. Okay. So the question is, right now the Gemara doesn't realize yet, right now the scum of the Gemara doesn't realize yet what we just said, that Shmuis HaRois means when it involves the majority of the Jewish people. Now we're going to address that point. So the Gemara says, right now, the Gemara figures that Shmuis HaRois means when you get news that Jews were killed. So the question is, do you in fact tell Kriya for bad news like that? They one time told Shmuel that Shabru Malka, who was the king of Persia and Babel at that time, had killed 12,000 Jews in a place called Mezigas Kesri, v'loy kora, and Shmuel didn't tell Kriya for that. And the answer is loy omru ela beroyv tzibur ukamaisa shahoya, because the din of tearing kriya for Shmuel Sarois only applies when it involved most of the tzibur, as that story with David and Shoal, where not most of the Jewish people were killed, but most of them were involved in that battle, as opposed to here in Mezigas Kesri, that it was only one particular place where Jews lived. Now, the interesting point is, before we should say, what about, we learned yesterday, though, that you have to at least tear kriya for a Talmud Chacham or for an Adam Kosher. I mean, among the 12,000 Jews over there, there have to have been some Talmud Chachamim, there have to have been some Anoshim Kshirim. And so the answer is, so there are various answers. We talked yesterday that the Ramban says that a Talmud Chacham does not have to tear kriya for such things. Well, then that's the answer. Shmuel is a Talmud Chacham of a much higher caliber than any Chachamim that there might have been in Mezigas Kesri, and therefore he's not obligated to tear kriya for them. Another answer would be, the Gemara is going to say now, actually, that they were at fault. They rebelled against Shabur, and therefore he went and crushed the rebellion and killed them. So therefore, according to that, even if we say that normally you would have to, but in that case, Shmuel would hold that because they brought it on themselves, he's not required to. So that's the Gemara asks. So, mi kotel Shabur malka yehudoi? Since when did King Shabur ever kill Jews? Well, Amalei Shabur Malka l'Shmuel, the same Shabur Malka says to Shmuel, Tasili, I deserve a reward from Hashem. To like Katli Yehudi Me'olam, I never killed a Jew. And here we're saying he killed 12,000. The answer is Hosam Inhu Gamul Nafshayu. The answer is with Mezigas Kesri, they brought it on themselves by rebelling against Shabur. The Amr of Ami, as we find, Rab Ami says about that incident, Lakal Yatsiri, the Mezigas Kesri, because of the noise of the harp strings of Mezigas Kesri, in other words, that they were rebelling against Shabur, against King Shabur, and celebrating it with harps and music, Poka Shura de Lurkia, the noise was so loud that the wall of Lurkia, the next town over, fell down. It's a metaphor, in other words, how much they were celebrating that they were successfully revolting against Shabur. So therefore, when Shabur came and fought against them and killed them, then he was justified in doing that. They're rebelling against him, and therefore he can do what it takes to put down the rebellion. When he boasts to Shmuel that he never killed Jews, he means he never killed Jews without a reason, like Goyish kings in those days and even much closer to our times used to do. So that's the case of Shmuel Sirois. Next, Al Birkas Hashem Menolon. Where do we know that a person has to tear kriya when he hears somebody cursing Hashem? So Dichtiv. So you have the pasuk that describes over there how Rav Shakeh is going and giving a whole speech. Rav Shakeh was one of the ministers in Sanhedrin. The Gemara discusses in Sanhedrin whether he was a goy or whether he was a Yisrael mumer. So he went and gave a whole speech in Sanhedrin's name, telling the Jewish people, you better surrender to Sanhedrin, or he's going to conquer you and destroy you. And in the course of the speech, he says, don't think that Hashem is going to protect you. Don't think that your God is any more powerful than the gods of all the other nations that Sanhedrin conquered and defeated. That's Birkas Hashem, blaspheming Hashem, and comparing him just to those Geshkin. So the Gemara discusses, as I said, in Sanhedrin, whether this Tosfos refers to it over here, whether this Rav Shakeh was a goy or whether he was a Yisrael mumer. So it's discussed in both the Babli and the Yerushalmi. The Rambam and then the Poskim after him, Paskin, like the opinion that you only need to do it when you hear it from a Yid. If you hear a goy blaspheming Hashem, then you don't have to. And the Yerushalmi, I think, says a line on it. Listen, you know, if it wasn't that way, we'd have to be walking around with torn clothes all the time. The goyim are always saying disrespectful things against Hashem. Anyway, So the pasuk says, the pasuk says Rav Shakeh is giving his speech, and several ministers of Chizkiyahu are there listening to it. And then the pasuk says, "Vayyavay Yoakim ben Chilkiah Asher Labayis." So Yoakim ben Chilkiah, who was in charge of Chizkiyahu's palace, he was the chief of staff. The Shevna Sofer and Shevna the scribe, the Yoach ben Asaf Hamazgir and Yoach ben Asaf the recorder, all came El Chizkiyahu to tell him what's going on. Krue b'godim, with their clothes ripped. So now, why are they ripping their clothes? It must because they heard Birkas Hashem from Rav Shakeh. So the Gemara says, let's learn a little halacha about that. Tana Rabbana, Echad Hashemeya, the person, both the person who hears the Birkas Hashem, the Echad Hashemeya mipi Hashemeya, or if he hears it secondhand from the one who heard it. Either way, Chay of the Kriya. He has to tear Kriya when he hears it. Now, on the other hand, when the Edom come to Beis Din and they give Eders that somebody cursed Hashem and it's Chayav Misa, they don't have to tear at the time because they already tore at the time that they heard it. So Tosfos explains, in other words, for example, so that's what we mean, Shemeya Mepia Shemeya. So the Mishnah in Sanhedrin described when a person is being judged by Beis Din for Birkas Hashem. So most throughout most of the proceedings, the Edim don't actually say the words that the person said because they don't want to be constantly saying over the blasphemy of Hashem. Rather, they use an expression like Yake Yosius Yosi. When it comes to the Gemara Din, of course, they can't execute the person for saying Yake Yosius Yosi. So then the Mishnah describes they send everybody else out of the room. And the one of the Edim says to they tell the first of the Edim, so tell us exactly what you heard. And he says the exact words that the person said. And then the Dayanim get up over there and tear Kriya. And the second aid, instead of having to repeat it, just says, I heard the same thing as him. But we're saying the Dayanim have to tear Kriya at that time. The Edim do not. So the question is, the Shal Shashamu, my Havi. Fine, but who cares that they tore Kriya at the time they heard it? Hokashani Hashka. The fact is they're hearing it again now, because they're hearing themselves say it. So why shouldn't they have to tear Kriya again? The answer is, Lois Takodadach. You can't think that way. It has to be that the pasuk specifically says that they don't have to, dichtiv, because the pasuk continues, by Hishmaya Melech Chizkiyahu, when Chizkiyahu heard what they said, by Yikras Gadav, he tore his clothes, implying Hamelech Korah Vahem Lekoru. So he tore his clothes, they didn't. So even though they hear themselves saying it over, but they didn't tear Kriya because they had already torn it when they heard Rav Shakeh saying it. So by the same token, the Edim don't have to tear again. In Beis Din, they already tore when they first heard it. Only the Dayanim, who are hearing it for the first time, have to tear Kriya. Now, the loy misachin minalon. So how do we know that when a person rips his clothes for Birkas Hashem, that he's never allowed to sew it up? So the answer is asya kriya kriya. We make a zeirah shava on the word kriya because we said before by Elisha that he tore his clothes, and we said and shnayim kriyim means that you can never sew it back up. So the same way over here, it says krue begodim. So therefore, it also means they can never sew it up. Tosfos asks, in that case, then that should apply to every kriya. Every kriya, every one of the things that they're not just the ones that we're saying in this braisa, every time a person does kriya, you should never be allowed to sew it up permanently. So Tosfos just says, v'shem aloy mistabalei, maybe it's not a svara to say that every kind of rip should not be able to be sewn up. The Ritva explains, in other words, what we're going to limit it to, for example, you know, here we have something involving the king. So therefore we're gonna limit it. We're gonna say that there's only things that involve that involve a king or somebody very important, like we're saying over here is Ain and Masach, and we're not gonna extend it, for example, to a person's brother or spouse or whatever. Okay. Next, Sefer Torah Shenisrach Minolon. Where do we know that you have to tear Kriya if you see a Sefer Torah burnt? So Dichtiv, the pasuk describes, you have the story where Yirmiyahu writes Megillas Eicha. This was about 17 years before the Churban. He wrote out Megillas Eicha. He gave it to his Talmud Baruch ben Neriah to go and bring it to go and read it in front of the people, and they should hear what kind of terrible disasters are going to happen, and maybe it'll frighten them into doing tshuva. The upshot is the pasuk says that in fact at the time the king of Yehuda was named Yehoyakim. He was a terrible Rasha. We actually had something about him recently in Ein Yaakov. But he was a terrible Rasha. His ministers mostly were tzaddikim. So the Pesukim describe over there how his ministers were Taka very deeply affected by it, and they went and told Yehoyakim about what's going on. So Yehoyakim told them to bring the scroll and read it to him, and send he wants to hear what's going on. And then the pasuk describes by he tikro Yehudi sholosh blosses barba when Yehudi, one of the ministers over there, read three or four dlosses. Dlosses literally means doors, but the Gemara is going to explain soon that it means psukim. So yikra'eha b'sara sefer, it says here in the Gemara by yikra'eha, but actually Agos Habak takes out the vav, and in fact there's no vav in the pasuk. Yikra'eha b'sara sefer, Yehoyakim cut it up with a sofer's knife, a sofer's pen knife like, v'hashlech ala esh asher la'och b'gomer, and he threw it into the fire in the fireplace. So, and then the pasuk continues, as we're going to quote soon, that it says the ministers did not rip their clothes, implying that they should have. So therefore we see that you have to tear kriya for such an event. So the Gemara asks, before we get into that, my sholosh dlosses baba, what is that? Because they didn't, because the pasuk makes a point of saying that they didn't, implies that they should have, as the Gemara is going to say soon. So my sholosh dlosses v'abba, what does that phrase mean that Yehudi read three and four dlosses? So it means three or four psukim. Or three or literally dlosses means more like stanzas. So in fact, actually, in handwritten copies of Megillas Eicha, like in some kehillas, they have the minhag to learn it from a parchment set, from a parchment scroll, and also you can find it printed this way in some printed Tanakh. They actually have a space after every pasuk of Megillas Eicha, so it's really like every pasuk is a stanza of its own, almost. So what happened? Why chapter 3 and 4? In other words, the implication is that he only started ripping it up and then burning it when he got to the fifth pasuk. So what happened? Omru leila Yehoyakim. So what happened was, they told Yehoyakim, Kosev Yumiya Sefer Kinnas. Yumiya has written a Sefer Kinnas, he's written a book of Eicha, which is describing in advance what's going to happen at the time of the Churban. So he asked, okay, so what does it say in it? And they started reading. The first pasuk goes, Eicha Yoshva Badar. How is it that Yerushalayim is sitting lonely? Omalahu, so Yehoyakim says, I don't care, I'm no Malka. I'm still the king. In other words, it doesn't matter to me what happens to my subject. Let Yerushalayim be lonely. As long as I'm the king, I don't really care. Okay, Ein Melech B'loy Am, but still, okay, you know, there could be some people left that he could be ruling over. Well, fine, I won't rule over them in Yerushalayim. I'll have a different capital city. I don't care. As the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, he was a tremendous Rosh. Next, they read him the next pasuk, Bocha Sivka Balayla, Yerushalayim and the Jewish people are crying at night. He says, doesn't matter, I'm not Malka, I'm still the king. Golsa Yehuda Me'oni, the Yehuda has gone into Golos because of poverty. No, it doesn't matter. I'm not Malka. I'm still the king. Darchei Tzion Avelis. They read him the fourth pasuk. The roads of Tzion are desolate because nobody's coming. So still, I'm not Malka. Doesn't matter. I'm still the king. As long as there are subjects someplace, doesn't matter whether in Yerushalayim or someplace else, I'm the king. Then they got to the fifth pasuk. Hoyu Tzorehel L'Rosh. Her enemies became the head. This is the Gemara mentions, this is the famous expression, Kol HaMeitzu B'Yisrael Na'aseh Rosh, that were the people who harass and persecute the Jewish people are the ones who become the head, who become the great powers for a variety of reasons, one of them being Tosfos mentions, we're going to learn in a few weeks in Chagiga, Be'ez Hashem, that one reason for that is that way, it's less shameful when the Jewish people are conquered and defeated by a powerful nation than it would be if they were defeated by a bunch of nobodies. So therefore, the Eibishter arranges in advance that whatever power conquers and then defeats the Jewish people is a very strong power. And there's a half dozen other reasons that Mephoshim give as well. Anyway, so they got to that pasuk, Hoyu Tzorei Al-Rosh. Now that means Tzorim are the leaders, are the kings. That means Yehoyakim is not anymore. Omalahu Man Omra. So now he pays attention. He says, who's saying that? Who's saying all of this, that I'm not going to be king anymore? And the pasuk continues, Ki Hashem Hoygo Al-Rosh Sha'aha. Because Hashem has afflicted the Jewish people because of their many aveiros. So miyad koder kalaskodes shabbat. At that point, Yehoyakim ripped out or tore out or cut out all of the names of Hashem that are in it. There's a few other explanations of koder as well. Rav Shlomo ben Ayosim says one of them might be that he blacked them out. Anyway, the sofer and the esh, and he burnt the whole thing in fire. So therefore, so that was, and behind the chtiv, and the pasuk continues, v'loy fachadu v'loy koru es begayim. The ministers who were there were not afraid, and they didn't rip their clothes. Miklal de bo l'mikra. So the implication is they should have ripped their clothes after this desecration of, now it's not a sefer Torah, but it's a sefer of, it's a sefer of Tanakh that has Hashem's name in it. And they should have ripped their clothes, and they shouldn't. And therefore, so we see that you have to rip for such a thing. Marsha points out, by the way, you look at it, that pasuk ki Hashem hoigal roi psheha is the first time in the Gelas Eicha that Hashem's name appears. So therefore, only then are we saying that he started cutting out the names of Hashem and desecrating it and throwing it in the fire. There is also a vote from, I think Rabbi Yonasan Eibershitz that says that Yehoyakim figured when it comes to the first four psukim, he's not so worried because, okay, these are gzeiras from Hashem. But we know that a gzeira for bad from Hashem can always be bottled. But then he comes to the fifth pasuk, Koyut Tzorei al-Rosh, where for the Jewish people it's a bad thing, but for whichever nation is going to be conquering them, is going to be becoming the superpower, for them it's a good thing. So now already Yehoyakim was smart enough to realize that kind of Zera is not going to be canceled. That's why he got upset and started ripping it up. Okay. So the question is, Amaleta Papala Baya. How do you know that we're saying they should have ripped Kriya because a Sefer Torah or something like a Sefer Torah was being burnt? Maybe what we're saying is they should have ripped their clothes because of Shmuel HaRois, because Migalas Eicha is talking about how many Jews were killed and taken into Golos. And we said before that Shmuel HaRois, you rip Kriya for. Omalais, Abai answers him, Shmuel HaRois, Bahi Shaita Mihavu, there weren't yet Shmuel HaRois. It wasn't yet that the Churban and the Golos and the killing of Jews had happened. The Navi was saying that it's going to happen if they don't do Tshuva. That's not considered, especially when we come to a Gzeira of Hashem, which again, a Gzeira of Hashem for something bad can be Nisbato. That's not a valid reason yet to Teo Kriya. Only when the actual event happened. So therefore, we have to say that the reason they would have had to rip Kriya is because of the tearing and the ripping and there's because of the ripping and the burning of the scroll of Megillah Sefer. Yeah. So in this connection, Amar Rav Huna, Horoya Sefer Torah Shenikra, if a person sees a Sefer Torah was ripped, or a number of Rishonim have a Girsa, not Shenikra, but Shenisra, that was burnt, Chayav Lekroya Shtei Kriyas. He has to actually tear two Kriyas. Echad ala Gvil v'Echad ala Ksav. One for the fact that the parchment of the Sefer Torah was burnt or ripped, and the other one for the writing, because the parchment itself has Kedusha, and therefore you have to tear Kriya for that as well. Shenema, as we see in that pasuk, Achrei Sreita Melech Es HaMegillah V'Esad Bodim. The pasuk describes after the king had burnt the Megillah and the words, then Hashem told Yirmiyahu to rewrite Sefer Eicha. So we see Megillah Sefer. So we see that both things are mentioned separately, the Megillah and the words. Each of them deserves a Kriya of its own. The Gemara tells us case. Rab Abba and Rab Huna bar Chiya Habu Yasvi. One time, Rab Abba and Rab Huna bar Chiya were sitting together. Kamei de Rab Abba. They were sitting in front of Rab Abba. Boy laughed, Nuye, and he had to go to the bathroom. On the side over here, it brings a different Girsa, and also Hagois Ma'arav Ranchburg on the bottom also says it's not supposed to be Kamei de Rab Abba. It's supposed to be Kom Rab Abba. Rab Abba got up. So Rab Abba and Rab Huna bar Chiya were sitting together as Chaverim, and Rab Abba got up because he had to go to the bathroom. Anyway, Boy Lafnui, he had to go to the bathroom. Shakli, well, you can't wear tefillin in the bathroom, and in those days, as we know, they used to wear tefillin all day. Shakli le tetapte, so he took his tefillin, tetapte le tetapos, achse abe sadia, and he put it on the pillow, he put it on his pillow. Asoi basna amisa, as he was, while he was away, an ostrich came, Bala Mivla in, was about to swallow the tefillin. Ostriches, a lot of times, eat different things that are not really food. It helps them, they don't have teeth, so it helps grind up the food in their stomachs, and they're large birds, they could easily swallow a pair of tefillin. So this ostrich was about to swallow it. The Yerushalmi tells a story, by the way. It says that Abuna Bachia grabbed a hold of the ostrich and choked it to prevent it from swallowing the tefillin. But anyway, the point is that it almost happened. Omar, said Rav Abba, says, Hashti Ichaivin Ishtei Kriyas. You know, if that ostrich had actually swallowed the tefillin and destroyed them, I would have had to tear two Kriyas. Like we just said, one for the parchment of the tefillin and once for the writing on them. Amale Menolacha. So Rav Huna Bar Chiya says to him, how do you know that? The same kind of thing happened to me one time, that my tefillin were almost ruined by a wild animal. Ba'asoi lakamei de Rav Masna. I came to Rav Masna to ask a shayla, do I have to, in his case, I guess the tefillin actually were damaged by a wild animal. So I went to Rav Masna to ask him what the din is. V'loi have of a yodah, and Rav Masna didn't know the answer. Asoi lakamei de Rav Yehuda. So Rav Huna Bar Chiya continues. I went to ask Rav Yehuda, v'omali, and he told me, hochi omar Shmuel. This is what Shmuel said. Loi omru ela bizroya. That you have to tear kriya for a sefer Torah being destroyed is only when it's bizroya, only when it was done by force, where nobody can save it, uchamaisa shahoya, like the case that happened involving Yehoyakim. Where, in other words, we're not talking about when there's an accident or an animal coming and eating it or whatever, or we're also not talking about, for example, let's say a fire breaks out and a sefer Torah gets burnt. We're talking about where it's bizroya, where it's being done by force, by Yehoyakim, the king, or by Lahavdo, by a goy who takes a sefer Torah and deliberately goes and burns it or whatever, or kamaisa shahaya, that's when you would have to teo kriya, but not if there was just an accident, like in this case, even if the ostrich had swallowed the tefillin, it wouldn't be a reason to teo kriya. Okay. Now, Ore Yehuda Menolon. Now, we said before, the Braisa had said that three other things that you have to tear kriya for are when you see the cities of Yehuda that were destroyed, the Beis HaMikdash, and Yerushalayim. So, Ore Yehuda Menolon, where do we know you have to tear kriya when you see the destroyed cities of Yehuda? So, the Pasuk described, after the Churban, you have their Gedalia ben Achikam, is the governor of the Jews who remained in Eretz Yisrael. His headquarters are in Mitzvah. Then you have the whole story how Yishmael ben Nesanya came and assassinated him. And then the Pasuk goes on to describe how there were people coming to Yerushalayim, as we're going to say now, where Yishmael tricked them and took them to a place and killed all of them. So the Pasuk describes, Vayavoyu anoshim Mishchem, Mishiloh, Mishomron. There were some people who came from Shchem, Shiloh, and Shomron, cities further north in Eretz Israel. Shmoinim ish, there were 80 men. Megulche Zokon, with their beards shaved as a simon of mourning. The Ukruei Begodim, and with their clothes ripped, also as a simon of mourning. Umisgodidim, and they'd made cuts in their skin in mourning. And umincha levoina biyadim lahavi beis Hashem. They had a korban mincha and levoina in their hands that they were intending to bring as a korban. So, meaning, in other words, they're obviously in teo kriya for the destruction of the Beis Mikdash. Because then, why are they still bringing their korban mincha? They would realize they can't bring it anymore. It has to be that on the way from Shechem, Shiloh, and Shomron, they saw cities of Yehuda that had been destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar and his army, and they tore kriya over those. So Tosfos says, okay, you know, the fact that it says Megulche Zokon and misgoded him is obviously not something a person is required to do. Those, we would say, those are extra things that they did. But the Kriya, we'll learn from them that you're required to do Kriya for it. So in this connection, Omer Abchelbay Omer Ula Bira, Omer Abalazar, Haroya Ore Yehuda B'churbanan, when a person sees the cities of Yehuda in a destroyed state, and here you have the Beis Yosef discusses the point. What does it mean destroyed? Does it mean actually destroyed as in that nobody is living there? Or does it mean that it could even be that there are people living there and even Jews living there, but they're not ruled over by Jews? So then he says, so when he sees that, Omer, he says the pasuk from Yeshaya, Ore kochachol hayu midbar, your holy cities have become a desert, the Kareya, and then he rips Kriya. Yerushalayim b'chobana, when he sees Yerushalayim in its destroyed state, then he says the continuation of that pasuk. Siyon midbar hayosa. Siyon has become a desert. Yerushalayim shmama. Yerushalayim is desolate. B'koreya, and he tears kriya for that. Beis hamikdash b'chobanai. When he sees the Beis hamikdash destroyed, Omer, he says the next pasuk from Yeshaya. Beis korchenu v'sivatenu asher hiluchah abesenu. Our holy and glorious house where our ancestors used to praise you. Hoya l'sreif haseish has become a place that was burnt by fire. V'chol machmadenu hoya l'chorba. And all of our precious things have become destroyed. V'kareya, and he rips kriya for that. Now, what do we do nowadays? So as far as Ore Yehuda, the general minhag nowadays is that people don't do kriya for Ore Yehuda. So So first of all, one reason is because according to the Beis Yosef, it may only apply when those places are ruled over by Goyim, according to one possibility that the Beis Yosef says. And nowadays, most, if not all of these places are ruled over by Jews, by the state of Israel. Another point is maybe we don't know where many of those Orei Yehuda were. There's an interesting argument as far as Hebron, maybe it's not even considered Orei Yehuda, because Hebron was actually a city where the Levite was actually one of the Orei Mitzvot of the Levite. So the general minhag is not to do kriya for the Orei Yehuda. On the other hand, for Yerushalayim and for the Beis Hamikdash, in principle, a person is supposed to tell kriya. And we find, for example, when the Friedrich Rebbe visited Eretz Yisrael in 1929, he did. If you look at description of his visit over there, it mentions that he tore kriya when he first saw the old city of Yerushalayim and tore kriya again a day or two later when he went to visit the Kosel. With that said, though, there are a lot of people who are, first of all, there are a lot of minhagim that people are makel at certain times, not to say a kriya. For example, on Erev Shabbos, Acha Chatzos, and during Chol HaMoed, and on Chanukah, and on Purim, and even some people have the minhag on days when you don't say Tachnun. So the poskim achronim talk about, I mean, there's not really a solid basis for any of those minhagim, but still, okay, you know, it's minhag Yisrael, we're not going to stop it. Other times, people also are not always so careful about it. There are maybe some arguments that can be said in favor of it. With Yerushalayim, again, at least you have parts of Yerushalayim are ruled over by Jews. So therefore that might be a reason to pater, although the Rebbe was not too happy with that explanation. As far as the Beis Hamikdash, there's an argument that maybe only when you see the floor of the Azara, the floor of the Har HaBayis, would you have to tear? Not necessarily when you see the Kosel and you see the Dome of the Rock behind it, would not necessarily be, because after all, neither of the Kosel is the wall of the Har HaBayis. The Dome of the Rock is a building that was built over the site of the Beis Hamikdash. It's not the actual, you could argue, it's not the actual Beis Hamikdash itself. So the poskim are not very comfortable with these various excuses. So the Meister, so a person really should, even if a person is not going to tell Kriya, he still has to say the Psukim, it says, but in principle, a person should, you know, bring along an old shirt or something and tell Kriya then and then change out of it. The Meister, you don't see many people are not careful with it, but that's, so like I say, you know, you have different justifications that they bring for it, but it's not so certain how solid those justifications are. The Braisa said, Kereya al Mikdash or Moisifar Yerushalayim. You tear Kriya when you first see the Mikdash, and then you add to the Kriya for Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, Ruminu, I have a contradiction to that. A Braisa says, Echad Hashemeya, whether a person heard that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, so he's living at the time when the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and he hears the news, the Echad Haroya, or afterwards when a person comes and sees the site of the Beis Hamikdash destroyed, Kivin Shigia L'Tsoifim, as soon as he reaches Tsoifim, Tsoifim might be one particular place from which you can see the old city, which would be, it might be, for example, what nowadays called Harat Tsoifim, or something like that, or Rashi and Tosfos discuss in other places in Shas, does it mean that, or does it mean in general any place around Yerushalayim, where the first place from which you can see the city is called Tsoifim. The Kafter Beferach says on it that it would be approximately a half hour's walk from the old city. Anyway, so if you see that, Korea, then you have to tear Korea. The Korea al Mikdash Bifnatma by Yerushalayim Bifnatma. And the Braisa continues, you have to tear separate Korea for the Beis Hamikdash and for Yerushalayim. Yet the Braisa that we quoted at the top of the Amud says that you have to tear for the Beis Hamikdash, and then you only add to that tear for Yerushalayim. So what is it? The answer is like Kasha, there's no contradiction. Hard to pog up a Mikdash Bereisha. One is where the first place that he sees is the Beis Hamikdash. So then he tears Kriya for the Beis Hamikdash and adds to that when he sees the rest of the city of Yerushalayim. Hard to pog up Yerushalayim Bereisha versus if he sees Yerushalayim first, where then he tears Kriya for Yerushalayim and a separate Kriya for the Beis Hamikdash, because the Beis Hamikdash is more important. Now, how would he first see the Beis Hamikdash before seeing Yerushalayim? So Rashi describes, let's say they brought him into Yerushalayim in a box, and then they open up the box, and the first thing he sees is the Beis Hamikdash. Various Rishonim talk about various other possibilities. For example, you look on a map, you can find that the Har HaBayis is on the east side of Yerushalayim. So therefore, you're coming to Yerushalayim from the east, and you first see the Har HaBayis before you see the rest of the city. So that would be another way. There's a few other possibilities. Now, we said before that all of these rips that we said, all of these cases where a person tears Kriya, we said you're never allowed to sew them up completely. So let's talk about that. Tonanabonon. B'chulon, Rashoyin, L'sholilon. All of these all of these tears that a person, all of these cases where a person tears kriya for any of these things, he's allowed to afterwards l'sholalon, to baste them, meaning with some loose stitches, ulamolalon, or to fold them up. Rashi describes the kapel beged b'tfira, so it means in other words like you fold up the edges one over the other and then you sew them, ulaloikdan, and to collect them, which means like you do like one stitch here, one stitch there, velasoisem kamin sulamos, or to make them like ladders, meaning Rashi described, you would do a couple of stitches here, and then a little further away, another couple of stitches, so therefore it resembles rungs of a ladder. So all of those things you're allowed to do, avaloila achoisan, but not to make a permanent, not to make a permanent good stitch. Amar Rav Chista, and Rav Chista says, what kind of stitching are we saying? You're not allowed to, ubi ichoy al kasanit. Specifically, we're talking about the kind of stitching that they did in Alexandria. Tosfos brings two possibilities. The Yerushalmi says where you can't even recognize that it was ever ripped. So that could mean, in other words, for example, we're showing him talk about that according to that, Ichri Alexandri would be that you actually, you take the thread at the edges of the rip and you attach them back together so that you can never tell, so you couldn't tell unless you look at it really carefully, I guess, that there was ever a rip there. Tosfos then brings from a septa smachos means just when it's sewn up as much as possible, meaning the kind of stitching that we think of nowadays, where you turn the two ripped edges to the inside and stitch it so that on the outside it looks fairly smooth and on the inside there's a bump. So those are two different definitions of ichui, and the result of that is that in halacha you have a machlokes poskim which one to follow. So we try to be machmir according to it. So we say that even the second one, which is less, even the second one, we don't do. Tananabanan, and then we learn in a braisa the flip side of it. So now we talk about that you're not allowed to, he said that you're not allowed to sew up these kriyas. Now vice versa, hakireya mitocha sholol, if there was an area in the garment that was basted with loose stitches, or mitocha melol, or where you folded the edges over and sewed them, mitocha leket, or where you did it loose stitches, mitocha hasulamos, or where you did ladder-like stitches, lo yotza, then you're not yotza kriya, because those are not really considered the actual fabric. Mitocha ichu yotza, but if you do kriya on a place where there was ichui done, then you yotza. Amar Rav Chista of ichui Alexandri, same idea, it means when the ichui was an ichui Alexandri, which is, again, you have the two definitions that Tosfos says, then that can be considered a full-fledged garment, and therefore tearing it, a person is yotza the mitzvah of kriya. So therefore, the result is, the post can say, since we have two definitions of what ichui Alexandri is, so as far as tearing kriya, make sure it's only in a place that has the first kind of ichui Alexandri, where you can't even tell that it was ever ripped. And as far as sewing it, make sure not to do even the second kind, which would be where you could tell that it was ripped, but it's sewn up properly. Tananabanan, we learn in a braisa, rashoi lahoipchei lamaso ulachosei. Now, what you are allowed to do, you have to remember in those times, their clothes were not like now where they're fitted and they have sleeves and whatever. Clothing in those times was basically like a talus or a cloak or something like that, where you could easily wear it right side up or upside down. The side that was for the neck could then instead become the bottom of it. So you're allowed to turn it over, and then once it's turned over, you're tearing kriya by the neckline. Now we're saying that you're allowed to turn it over so that now what used to be the neckline is now the hem of the garment, and then you'd be allowed to sew it up permanently. On the other hand, Reb Shimon Elazar also lachos it. Reb Shimon Elazar says you're not allowed to. and he continues, Uchshem sha moicha also lachos it. Just as the one who's, if a person sells this garment, just as the seller, the original owner of it, is not allowed to sew it up permanently. Kachal akeach also lachos it. Neither is the buyer allowed to. Ulafichach moicha tzorech loidiyah lelakeach. Therefore, the seller would have to inform the buyer that this rip over here is not just an accidental rip. This was a rip of kriya for one of these things that we said before, and therefore be careful you don't sew it up again. Tosfos explains that Tosfos says the halacha would be like the Tanakhama. On the other hand, the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch Paskin, like Rav Shimon Elazar, we're going to talk about further down on the Amud, that when we say halacha kedivrei hamekel be'evil, that rule that we've said several times in our perek does not necessarily apply to kriya. Kriya has different rules, and there we would sometimes say that we go according to the more swift, to the swifter opinion. And the reason is because Kriya and Avelos are not necessarily connected. The Ran points out, and the Nemuka Yosef rather points out, in fact, you have, for example, you see, you tear Kriya even on Chol HaMoed, but you don't do Avelos on Chol HaMoed. So you see, therefore, that Kriya is swifter. Other Rishonim point out also that Kriya is to a certain extent Daraisa, because we learned it back at the beginning of the Perek. We learned it from that it says by Elazar and Isamar after Nadav and Abihu passed away, we don't tear your clothes, implying everybody else has to. So therefore, to a certain extent, it's considered Daraisa. Whereas Avelos is the Rabbanon. So therefore, by Avelos, we're more Makel, but by Kriya, not necessarily. Okay. Tosfos also discusses the question, would you be allowed to sell this garment to a goy? So Tosfos says, v'chura hoyim mutter. But still, he says, v'oid sarachim. Okay. Next. Tananabanan. Tchilas kriya tefach. The first kriya, when a person first tears kriya, has to be a tefach long. The tosefes, and there's cases where a person is adding to the kriya. For example, we had the example before where a person first sees the place of the Mishmikdash and then sees the rest of the city of Yerushalayim, where he's adding to the Kriya. We're going to have other examples soon where we're talking about, for example, if a person, one relative passes away and then another relative passes away. So the addition is Sholosh Etzbois. That's going to be another three Etzbois. Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda Omer, Tchilas Kriya Sholosh Etzbois. Rav Yehuda says, the beginning of the Kriya only has to be three Etzbois. The Tosefes Kol Shehu, and if you're adding to an existing Kriya, then it can be even a tiny amount. Now, why three Etzbois? Tosefes says, we learned earlier in the Perek that Kriya is supposed to be a Tefach, because the Pasuk says by David, we said before that David tore his clothes when he heard that Shaul and Yonason and so forth had been killed. And it says by Yachsik the Godav that he grabbed a hold of his clothing, and we said grabbing a hold implies a Tefach. So Tosfos says, I don't understand then. Where is he? So how is he going against that? So Rishonim explain various possibilities. Either that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that Drosha, so therefore he says it doesn't have to be a full tefach. Or the answer could be actually that I think that Ashash says that, listen, you don't necessarily need four fingers to grab a hold of something. You see, for example, by Kmitza, a Kohen uses only three fingers. So by the same token, three fingers would be enough, and three fingers is three Etzbois, which is what Rabbi Yehuda is saying over here. So therefore, that would be enough. So Oma Ula Halachah Meir B'Kriya VaHalachah Rabbi Yehuda B'Tosefes. When it comes to the original Kriya, the Halacha is like Rabbi Meir that you need a Tefach. When it comes to the addition, then the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda that you can add culturally. And the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn in fact like that in a Braisa, that there's a third opinion. Rabbi Yossi and the Tchilas Kriya Tefach, the beginning of the Kriya, the initial Kriya has to be a Tefach, because Tefach is Kol Shehu. And if you're adding to the Kriya, then it can be any amount. So that means, in other words, first of all, when Rabbi Yossi argues with a Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, Tosfos points out, the Halacha is generally like Rabbi Yossi. Also, Rabbi Yossi is the Machria. He's taking a middle position between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, and the Halacha is often like the Divrei Machria. So therefore, those are two reasons to pass him like him. So the initial Kriya has to be a Tefach, and if you have an existing Kriya and you're adding to it, then it can be cultural. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabban, Omru Loi Mes Oviv, suppose they tell a person that his father passed away, the Korah, and then he ripped Kriya for that, Nes Bnoi, and then they tell him that his son passed away, or some other relative, Vahosif, and so he added to the existing Kriya. So Tachten Misacha, eventually, after Shloshim, the bottom part of the rip can be sewn up permanently, because that was for his son, and we said that's not the kind of rip that has to be permanently left. Elyon, Ena Misacha, but the upper part that he did for his father cannot be ever sewn up permanently because it was for his father. Vice versa, Mes Bnoi, the Korah, what if they tell him first his son passed away, and so he tore Kriya for him, then Mes Aviv Vahosif, and then they told him his father passed away, and so he tore for him, then the other way around, Elyon Misacha, Tachten, Ena Misacha, only the top part of it can be sewn up, but the bottom part not. What happens, Mes Aviv, Mes Imay, Mes Achiv, Mes Achosai, what if they tell him that his father, mother, brother, sister passed away? The Ritva discusses, does this mean that they told him that all four of them passed away, or does it mean any one of them? And he says it can mean even both of them. So he can tear one Kriya for all of them. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omer, al kulon kera echad. Rabbi Yehuda says no. For most of them, you can do one rip, and that's good enough. Al aviv al ima kera echad, but you have to do for father and mother, you have to do a separate kriya. Lefisha ein meisifin al kera aviv ima. Because you can't add to the kriya for father or mother. So the Gemara says, my timer. Well, why not? Amar of Nachman, Yitzchak, Lefisha Einan Bete Sefes. Because of the kriya for father and mother, it's not right to add to them, it's not right to add extra to the kriya for them. So therefore, they have to be a separate kriya. So Tosfos just discusses, I mean, that's not really explaining a reason. The Braisa said, Lefisha Einan Bete Sefen, Al Ked Av Yemin. What is Rav Nachman Yitzchak adding? So in fact, Tosfos brings that maybe the words of Lefisha Einan Bete Sefen, Al Ked Av Yemin don't really belong in the Braisa. On the other hand, there are Mephoshim that say that what Rav Nachman Yitzchak is saying, that he's not giving a new reason. He's saying because it's not derech eretz to add to the kriya for one's father or mother. Rav Nachman Yitzchak is just saying, why are you not allowed to? Because you're not allowed to, because not derech eretz. There is a machloikas among the Yerushonim, what exactly we mean over here. So do we mean that if his parent passed away, then he can't add to that kriya for his other relatives? He has to start a new kriya. But, or does it mean the other way around? If he started a kriya for his other relatives, then he can't add to it for his parents. There's different opinions among the Rishonim and Achronim about that. So who is the halacha like? Amar Shmuel, halacha could be heard of in Beseda. The halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda, that you need a separate kriya for the parents. So the Gemara says, how could Shmuel say that? Well, Amar Shmuel halacha kedivrei Amekel be'Evel. Didn't we say several times that Shmuel says the halacha is like the opinion that's lenient when it comes to Avelus? And the answer is, like we said before, Avelus l'chud, kriya l'chud. Avelus and kriya are two different things. When it comes to Avelus, yes, we say the halacha is like the more lenient opinion. When it comes to kriya, not necessarily. So again, you have a point that a number of the Rishonim make, that kriya is d'oraisa and Avelus is d'rabbanon. And you have the point that the Nemukah Yosef says that you see that kriya is done during Chol HaMoed and Avelus is not. So we see that kriya is more stringent than Avelus. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with dinim of kriya. Be'ez Hashem.